Free at Last, The Story of Martin Luther King by R. J. Owen. A black man took his son out to buy him a new pair of shoes. They went into an empty shoe shop and sat down in the front row of seats. A white shop assistant came up to them. "If you'll move to the seats at the back, I'd be glad to help you."
"There's nothing wrong with these seats," replied the black man.
"You'll have to move. I can't serve you here," continued the shop assistant. The black man saw no point in moving to other seats when nobody else was in the shop. Anyway, he did not like the idea of people having to sit in special chairs simply because of the colour of their skin.
"We'll either buy our shoes sitting here, or we won't buy shoes at all."
"I can't serve you here," repeated the assistant.
Father and son walked out of the shop. The son was Martin Luther King.
Kept apart. As a child, Martin lived a comfortable life. His family were quite well off. He and his brother and sister always had enough to eat, good clothes to wear, and a nice home. There was only one thing wrong for Martin. He was black, and he lived in a city where most white people thought black people were not as good as white ones. It was the city of Atlanta in the southern part of the United States. Martin was just 6 years old when he first learned how hard life could be for black people. Until then, his two best friends were white boys who lived nearby. They played together almost every day. However, when they were old enough to go to school, his best friends went to the school for white children. Martin had to go to the one for black children. His friend's mother kept telling him that they could not play together anymore. Martin could not understand it. He had done nothing wrong. He asked his own mother about it. Mrs. King told her son all about the history of the black people in the United States. She told him about how they had been slaves and that some white people still looked down on black people and kept away from them. Mrs. King tried to explain why there were many schools, cafes, cinemas, and even churches that black people could not enter. There was only for the use of white people.
"Don't let it make you feel you're not as good as white people," said Martin's mother. "You're just as good as anyone else, and don't you forget it."
Martin's father was also not afraid to stand up for himself. Once, when Martin was being driven in a car by his father, a policeman stopped them.
"Boy, show me your license," the policeman said to Mr. King.
That was the way many white people spoke to black people, even if they were grown men. Mr. King pointed to Martin.
"Do you see this child here?
He's a boy.
I'm a man."
The policeman booked him. A black man was not allowed to answer back a white policeman, although the policeman could be as rude as he liked to him. When he was 15 years old, Martin decided to find out for himself what it was like to live as an ordinary poor black person in the south of the United States. During his long summer holiday from school, he took two jobs. The first one was loading and unloading parcels and goods for a railway. The second was working on the loading platform of a firm which made mattresses for beds. The work was hard. He was able to talk to poor black people and learn about their needs. He noticed that when black people and white people were doing the same job, the whites always got paid more. He found out what it was like to work under a white boss. The foreman at the railway, for example, never called him by his name. He shouted out, "Nigger," when he wanted him. Martin felt sure that when he was older, he would spend a lot more time trying to get better conditions for black people. His life's work. During his next summer holiday from school, Martin worked in some tobacco fields in Connecticut. While he was there, he was asked by some of the workers to pray with them. They felt he could help them with their problems. From then on, Martin felt a stronger and stronger urge within him to be a minister of a church. He believed it was God's way of telling him that that was what he wanted. His father was the minister of a large church in Atlanta.
Religion, therefore, had always played an important part in Martin's life. He could remember and recite bits from the Bible before he was 5 years old. When he was only six, he used to sing hymns from memory. He liked to listen to church ministers preaching long before he was old enough to understand what they were saying. Once, when he was about 10, he said to his father, "That man had some big words, Dad. When I grow up, I'm going to get me some big words." Now, as a teenager, Martin was a pupil at Morehouse College. In the United States, such colleges are for teenagers. They are like our secondary schools, except that they are usually much bigger. Morehouse College had over 7,000 pupils and was the best college for black students in America. The head teacher was a man called Dr. Mays. He was not a medical doctor, but a church minister. When he preached, he often talked about being fair to others and about people being equal. Martin was able to see in this man both Christian faith and real concern for other people. Martin now believed that he must help people. He wanted to solve the problems they faced in their daily lives, as well as helping them to understand the teachings of Jesus. That is why, later on, his sermons were usually about making life on earth better, as well as about God. He believed that God is a good person who fights against evil things in the world. So, when he was 17, Martin decided that he would become a church minister. In 1948, he went to a college for those who wanted to become a minister. It was while he was at the college that Martin first became interested in the teachings of a great Indian man, Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi lived earlier this century. At the time, Britain ruled India. Gandhi wanted India to be free of British rule. Yet he did not believe in using violence to get rid of the British. He believed in peaceful protest, using methods like marches and strikes. Gandhi urged his followers to break unfair laws, but always to be polite and peaceful. These ideas appealed to Martin. He thought he might one day use them to get equal rights for black people in the United States. When he had finished his training, he became the minister of a Baptist church in Montgomery, Alabama. The division between blacks and whites was very clear in Montgomery. For example, the front seats on all buses were kept for white passengers only, even if there was nobody in them and the rear seats were full. Black people had to stand at the back. If the front seats were full, black people in the rear had to get up and give their seats to any white person who got on. Black passengers had to pay their fare at the front of the bus, get off, and walk to the rear door to get on the bus. Sometimes, after they had paid their fare, the bus would be driven off without giving them time to reach the rear door. The white drivers thought that this was a great joke. On the 1st of December, 1955, a black woman called Mrs. Rosa Parks got on a crowded bus. She had spent a tiring day working and shopping. She found a seat at the beginning of the black passenger section. At the next stop, some white people got on. The bus driver ordered Mrs. Parks to get up and give her seat to a white man. She refused. As she said later, "I was just plain tired and my feet hurt." The driver called a policeman who arrested her. The bus boycott. A number of black church ministers and leaders in Montgomery met to discuss the matter. They wanted to organize a protest. It was agreed to call on all black people not to use the buses on Monday, the 5th of December. This was called a bus boycott. On the Sunday before, in every black church, ministers appealed from their pulpits for the people to support the bus boycott. The first bus on that Monday morning passed Martin's house at about 6 o'clock. Martin and his wife got up early. Martin was drinking a cup of coffee in the kitchen when it happened. "Martin, Martin, come quickly," his wife shouted from the living room. Martin rushed in. "Look, it's empty,"